Hey everyone, I've got another episode of the Road to Revenue series. Today's episode is an hour-long free coaching session and Q&A. I'm going to go over the number one problem that every young entrepreneur makes and understand your relationship to money. Tweet me at David Meltzer your favorite takeaway from today's episode and check the show notes to see how you can contact me at any time.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We got a little background music still rolling. We're going to take, it's a BYOQ. That means bring the questions. I'll bring the answer. BYOQ. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for Friday training. We've been doing this for over 21 years now, I just saw. So that's pretty cool. We are here to be of service and of help. If you need anything, all you need to do, all the exercises, guides, and even my book, david@dmeltzer.com, reach out. We're happy to provide those. I will send you a book. Sign it, ship it for free. I'll pay for shipping, don't worry. But all the exercises from today of the BYOQ are available to you. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Next week's training is mentorship versus coaching and the nuances of that. We're going to be riding this wave on IG, on Clubhouse, and of course right here. Let's get started. What is your personal opinion of currency? I ask this because if everyone were millionaires, wouldn't that be a form of good communism? Wow. I don't think that a political party, like a communist party, can be attributed to everyone being a millionaire. I think millionaires, an abundant world of more than enough of everything, is a currency. And a currency is an object of energy that we put into the flow to get what we want. And if we could create an abundant collective consciousness of millionaires that were putting their currency into the flow, then I don't necessarily think that it would have to be through communism or socialism or capitalism. I think that devoid of any political structure is a currency of money and a philosophy and mindset of money. That if we could convince the whole world that there was more than enough of everything for everyone, that we all could be millionaires. And the interesting irony to that to me is most of us wouldn't want to be millionaires if we truly believed and had faith, which is another currency, that there was enough of everything for everyone. So I'm not sure how to connect a political party to, or political system, sorry, to being a certain amount of wealth. I subscribe to a theory that we all are wealthy and we just have to figure out what's interfering between us and the wealth that we already are. We are all healthy and we have to see what we're interfering with our own health and shift our paradigm and perspective. And attuned and aligned with my own mission, we are all happy. And we have to figure out what we're doing to interfere with that happiness. First up on Clubhouse is Mike Mamola. Mike Mamola, you got a question for me, my friend.
I do, Dave. Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where everyone is. And my question is, when we talk about coaches and mentors, I have a pretty good idea, but I love to hear it from you, obviously, for all of the apparent reasons. When people are looking to coaches and mentors, what are the differences and what should they look for in each specifically?
Yeah, I mean, this will be our training next week. I love the question. So I'm just going to touch on it to give a little bit of a taste of what next week's training is going to be about. But I think people, number one, don't know how to find a mentor or a coach. I think they don't know the difference between a mentor and a coach. And I don't think that they have the courage to ask for help of a mentor or a coach. I think they see everyone as a gatekeeper, not as a sponsor or power sponsor, but it's highest level. You know, we're looking to surround ourselves with the right people and the right idea. We're looking to get somewhere. And so it all starts with knowing what you want. It's same as ordering at a restaurant. You know, you could have a menu out there, but if you're too embarrassed to order what you want, you're not going to get what you want. Or if you don't know how to read or find or understand a menu, if any of you have traveled internationally and there's no pictures on the menu, these are all types of analogous situations to truly finding the right person to get you where to get you where you want to go. Two types of people, one that's going to bring the best out of you and one that's sitting in a situation that you want to be in that can give you directions on how to get there or give you a guide to get you there, meaning the relationship capital, the power sponsors in your life in order to effectuate getting you there. So we got a lot to talk about next week when it comes to, you know, a coach to bring the best out of you. And of course, a mentor to give the best of themselves in order to effectuate. But there's a system to utilize coaches and mentors to find them, utilize them, maximize what capabilities they have, and to take accountability for yourself. So we're going to go deep into that next week, next Friday training, always 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Hey, Mr. Mamula, thank you so much. I know you're down in the Bahamas, so what an honor for you to join me. Thank you so, so much. All right, next up, we'll bring up Andrew. I'll take another one here online. Andrew Warner, you're up next. We'll take a quick question in the interim as you come and get prepared. How can we turn a weakness into a strength? Well, I think gratitude turns every weakness into a strength. When we realize and are vulnerable and illuminate our weaknesses, we are able and capable through gratitude to find the light, the love, and the lessons in everything that we do. And so when we're capable of using gratitude, which is a tool to find light, love, and lessons, then we're able to transcend a weakness into a strength. When we move a weakness, and one of the abilities, gratitude, will move your weakness into a different place, weaknesses can become strengths. For example, my size, shape, and abilities were a weakness when I played college football. But when I had the same size and body shape put onto an airplane, it became an incredible strength. So as I was traveling around the world with the greatest athletes in the world with, you know, 6'4" to 7' bodies and my 5'7" stature with really short legs and a long torso fit perfectly into a plane seat. So I could actually fly more comfortably in a middle seat on a commercial liner than they did on a private plane because I just moved my weakness into a better place and it became a strength. A lot of times we just have a strength that aren't aware of it because it's in the wrong place, or we haven't done the work in order to utilize gratitude to find the light, the love, and the lessons in my weakness or our weakness in order to effectuate a strength. Something that will improve where we're at, push us to a better place, a better situation, et cetera. Okie dokie, Andrew Warner, you're up next.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Jake. Thanks thanks for bringing me up. So tell you a little bit about myself. So I did find a mentor in Mike Mamula, not only being my cousin, but being my mentor, someone I look up to. Really, the question I have for you is I'm a kid in my 20s. I'm just looking, what's the best advice of finding opportunity in whatever it is, investing or just growing your network or seeing where to go in life?
Yeah, Andrew, thank you so much. Big fan of your uncle as well. And been mentoring him for years and just a great business partner of mine. And even more importantly, now he's family with me as well. So totally appreciate you're actually in the right place by having someone like that, someone who sits in the situation you want to be in. Very broad question for such a young person. So I'm going to help you out. You cannot find anything outside of you that you can find inside of you. So what I want you to do is utilize 5 daily practices. And the first one that I want you to practice is to take inventory of who you are. Simply spend a minimum of 10 minutes a day to find out what personally is important to you today. In other words, what is your what? What is your what? What personally do I want? And then ask yourself, what personally do I want to do? What do I want to experience today? And three, what do I want to produce? What things do I want to get done? What do I want to provide in service and value to others? And then finally, get into the practice of receiving. You can't give what you don't have. And so if you can get into the practice of receiving and practice those daily inventory and say to yourself, I don't know what I don't know. I'm only this many years old and there's no way that I know everything, and I'm going to practice not knowing what I don't know. In other words, not being afraid to be a hypocrite and changing and growing. And if I feel stuck, it's a signal that I am growing, just like I'm stuck in a pair of shoes. That means my feet are growing bigger and bigger and they don't fit anymore. You're not fitting into your old self. So when you're looking to see at a young age, it seems overwhelming what you don't know and how many opportunities and choices and options you have. The best thing to do is look within yourself to the values that you have. Take inventory of your values without any fear that you're growing, expanding, and accelerating, and that you yourself are changing. And that's a good thing. So if you have to go back to your friends weekly, daily, monthly, it doesn't matter, and say, I've changed my mind. I want to be a doctor. No, I want to be a lawyer. No, I want to sell this. No, I would like to be a speaker, an author, an entrepreneur, a consultant. Whatever it is you want to be, don't be afraid of being a hypocrite. Change your mind. It means you're growing, accelerating. Keep your options open. Look within to find those options, and you will live an accelerated, expansive existence, a journey that you will enjoy every day without quit in the pursuit of all those options, opportunities, and your potential. Does that sound fair, Andrew?
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Thanks, man. I really, really appreciate the time talking to me.
You're awesome, man. Thank you very much, and thank your uncle for me as well. Next up is Terry Thompson, the double T. What's going on, Terry? Let me take a quick question online. What do you think is more important, the first impression or the lasting impression? Well, I think, oh man, that's so interesting. I would say the lasting impression, because we always have a way. There's so many people that at first may get the wrong impression, but through consistent, persistent behavior and exposure and awareness, that they may have and be able to re-engineer a lasting impression, which obviously has a longer shelf life than a first impression. First impressions, though, are very important. They make it easier to create and accelerate a lasting impression. As you know, even on the respect that a first impression could close a mind, and it takes 1,000 times the amount of effort to open a mind than it does to engineer an open mind. And so I would say that both are important, but a lasting impression is of more value in your legacy and your mission of empowering others to empower others for whatever you want to do, which is the best way to get exponentiality in your life, to grow, to expand. So to create the lasting impressions, the legacies that we want, for me, to empower others, to empower others to be happy, which is why I'm so grateful and full of joy for everyone that's here online, on IG and Clubhouse. Thank you so much. All right, Terry, you're up, my friend.
Hey, David, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on here. I love everything that you're doing. So my question is about the future of online education. It's definitely changing over time here. And here's my specific question. For entrepreneurs, how do you see, or what opportunities do you see for entrepreneurs to position themselves with their courses, their training, for accreditation, so that courses could be worth college credit to gain some of that market share?
That's a great question. And I see that transformation and the rethinking of our educational systems already into place. And one of the blessings of COVID was the acceleration of e-learning and the aspect of specialization through expertise. And never before have people, especially younger people, have access to the greatest experts in the greatest fields to help accelerate the skills, the knowledge, and even the desire. With personal development and inspirational, aspirational, motivational content that is available. And most importantly, the cost of education, which we knew is going down rapidly, especially for entrepreneurs. And so I think the most important thing is to understand the different opportunities, the timing and risk tolerance, just as an investment, because education itself is an investment in self. And to understand your own timing and risk tolerance, and prioritize it by what skills, knowledge, and desire you want to have with your experience of education. I am not someone, I know I'm going to be with our friend Gary Vaynerchuk in a couple of weeks doing the No Bull Conference. And we have a little bit of a debate because I'm far less adverse to a formal institutional education. It is determinative upon if it's free or how much it's going to cost you. And then also, I think it's one of the greatest ways to create an instant relationship capital or community amongst yourself. If you can get into the right schools, graduate schools, et cetera, you can accelerate your entrepreneurial journey and, your most importantly, capitalization journey by going to a school that has huge, dedicated, aligned alumnus who, you know, there's no accident that how many companies in the Silicon Valley are funded by Stanford or Cal graduates. It's no accident that the large schools, the Big Ten schools, the SEC schools create all types of entrepreneurial opportunity and support for one another. What is that value to you? What's your timing and risk tolerance? And for some people, it's very YouTube can give you the platform skills, knowledge, and desire to create a multi-billion dollar business. Amazon can do the same. There's just a variety of different opportunities and options. The nicest thing is that everyone in the world has access to the greatest education ever. I think in no time in history can you look back and tell me that anyone in the world could access greater educational material than this point today on March 26th. It's impossible. If you're, you know, in the old days, you know, the Goodwill Hunting joke, right? The kid at Harvard, and he says, oh yeah, you just spewed off what anyone could with, you know, $5 of late charges from the public library. We've opened a library to the world that has so much information. You could never access all of it, but it's searchable to a point where we could find the experts or the mentors or the coaches in order to effectuate exactly what we want. I think this is one of the biggest blessings of COVID, that we've been able to accelerate that access and understanding and utilization of education online. Did that answer your question, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Thanks for your feedback and your perspective. Appreciate it greatly.
I appreciate you. Anybody on Clubhouse, just to reset, I do free coaching sessions every Friday. You can get the guides to these, the exercises I talk about, and most importantly, my book for free. Happy to ship it to you. Pay for shipping. I don't want to do anything other than provide empowerment to you. Feel free to reach out, david@dmeltzer.com, or look at my bio there or anywhere. I am here to be of service. I've done it for over 21 years now. I've just been informed it's no longer than 20. So it's my lucky number. Besides, I'm a Clemente fan. All right, I'm going to take a question online. Is William Kraft, you're on deck, my friend. What's the biggest problem you see with young entrepreneurs? I will tell you the biggest problem I see with all entrepreneurs, young, middle-aged, and old. They don't ask for help. I find myself, if someone asks me, what's your biggest problem, Dave? I don't ask for help. Sometimes I just get in my own way, and there is so much help in person, on the phone, via email, and traditional and social media places, that I find myself wasting time, energy, and emotion, getting in my own way, not practicing radical humility, and not asking for help. You are far greater to find the open minds of the world and ask them simply, get a pen. Do you know anyone that could help me? There's only two types of people in my mind. One, a sponsor, someone that knows someone that can help me. And two, a power sponsor, somebody that can help me and knows somebody that can help me. To be able to effectuate that with that perception has unbelievably allowed me to get to places faster than you've ever believed. When you ask for help, it's simply finding someone that's sitting where you want to be and asking them for directions. No easier way to get somewhere than that. All right. Next up, I have William Kraft.
Hey, David, thank you so much for putting this room together. It's absolutely amazing. My question is really simple. And how do you approach competition?
So number one, comparison is different than competition. So comparison to me is the thief of joy. So many people, they think they need to be comparative and not competitive. I think competition is extremely important. In fact, my journey to happiness, my philosophy of happiness, is a competitive philosophy. What is it? To enjoy the consistent, that's every day, persistent, that's without quit, pursuit, that's competitive, of my potential. My competition is every day to be my greater self, to plateau and grow, to look only within. And my competition is to be aware of what creates that interference, void, shortages, and obstacles between me and my higher self, my greatest source of power, light, and lessons, which I'm connected to at all times. My greatest competitor is to me to compete against my own ego-based consciousness, to compete against the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, and angry, to separate instead, to fight the separation, to remind myself of the oneness and what I am connected through and to for others. It's amazing how many people steal their joy because they're competing against something they'll never win. Others. If you only compete to be your greatest self, you will have a fulfilling, passionate, purposeful, and profitable journey, without a doubt. And so I think a lot of people confuse comparative to competition. I'm a huge fan of competition of self and to expand, grow, and accelerate to our higher self, and to utilize that expansive philosophy and competitive philosophy within itself, where instead we use a comparative definition to competition, which only robs our joy, creates more interference, voids, and shortages. There'll always be something outside of you that you can't control that you may find steals your joy. So look within, compete within, and you will find passion, purpose, and profitability. All right, next up, I'm going to take a question online. Is the next person on deck on Clubhouse, Shanil Sadrani. Just a pleasure to have you here. What have you found to be the most effective strategy to use while networking? For me, I'm very systematic in my networking. I believe that the successful people that network have created a discipline, a habit, a strategy to networking. My discipline, habit, and strategy is to network 7 days a week, to make sure that every single day I'm asking as many times as I can in person. So creating a habit of asking people in person, what are you doing today? Where are you from today? What do you like about it? What don't you like it? Would it help you if? Do you know anyone that could help me? Same thing via email, same thing via phone and text, same thing in traditional media and social media. Do you realize that on average, everybody knows about 1,000 people minimum? Therefore, if you simply ask one person a day, that's 30,000 people a month. If you ask one person on each platform a day, that's 150,000 people a month that you simply have reached in some sort of frequency to effectuate other people sharing your ask to help find the best suited people that can effectuate what may be difficult to you, but simple to them. Remember, one of the things I always look for within myself to know my own capabilities is when people tell me, how do you do that? That's amazing. I could never do that. Those are all signals. It raises your awareness to what your superpowers are, what makes you special, your capability that you can offer as a service or a value to others. So look for that as well in others so that when you network, you know specifically how you could be of service or value to them, but more importantly, how or if they know someone that can help you. Okay, Shanil, you are up.
Hey, David and Jake, thank you for having me on here. The question I had today was, I hear a lot of successful people who've made it in life through podcasts and other means talk about following their passions and their purpose and sort of having a monofocus on everything. I was curious to know what advice you'd have for someone who hasn't figured it out yet, someone who's still, haven't figured out their purpose, their passion. What advice would you have for someone to start on that front? Thanks.
Oh, that's a terrific question. And, you're looking at someone that hasn't figured it out yet. But the one thing that I have figured out is that I haven't figured it out yet. So we have figured some things out, but there's always going to be more things to figure out. And so if you feel as if you don't have a passion or a purpose, this is a romantic idea. Everybody is connected to passion and purpose. And we want to make sure our purpose is greater than our pain. So as pain is elevated into our life in some sort of form that we define as a mistake or a setback or, a failure or other types of pain, we simply tell ourselves that my purpose has to be greater than my pain. And my purpose to me has become my thoughts about my purpose. See, if I have a purpose to think about my purpose, then I'm going to go ahead and manifest the attention and intention to that purpose that will give me that passion. In other words, what the heck is Dave Belcher talking about? Learning, being more interested than interesting. When we are seeking to learn, we have a purpose. When we are pursuing something, we have a purpose. So don't think about your why. Think about what you want to do, and then think about who can help you, and then think about how you're going to get there, and then think about how you prioritize the how into the now to make that you a capability of learning what? Learning to love what you do. Too many people think you love what you do. Some natural phenomenon comes up that you love. No, you have learned to love baseball. You have learned to love sewing. You have learned to love coding. You have learned to love selling. There's no natural love. It may be easier to learn to love it. It may be less interference between you and the activity that creates this feeling as if you love it. But I am here to tell you that you can learn to love anything if you focus in on the reason that you don't love it, which is that interference, that ego, the need to be separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry. Instead, take the Viktor Frankl perspective of learning to love everything that you do. If I can't learn to love something, I'm not going to do it until I can. I'm going to go ahead and delegate or hire somebody else to do it until I can figure out how to learn to love it. But your life through gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration will change because you will be able and capable to find the light, the love, and the lessons and learn to love everything you do, from taking out the trash to showering in the morning to brushing your teeth to selling, sewing, sleeping, whatever it is, I promise you, as a human being, that the greatest source of love, light, and lessons is coming through. You have the capability to learn to love everything that you do. Next up is my dear friend, one of the great coaching clients that I have. I'm going to bring up Gigi after I ask this question here. Was Tim's story really on your IG this morning? I love his new book, Miracle Mentality. What's your thoughts on miracles? Yes, Tim's story, unbelievable mind, thought leader, world-renowned miracle man himself, with the Miracle Mentality was on. My thoughts about miracles is that we ourselves are expressions of God, of genius, and we ourselves are miracles. And the only thing that gets in our way of understanding that each and every one of us is a miracle is the grievances that we create ourselves, the judgments and conditions that we put upon things, the fear and the interference that we put onto things. And my thoughts on miracles is that every day we are all miracles, and we are here to shine our own personal light and also to liberate others to shine their light. And if you can shine your light as a miracle and inspire others or liberate others to shine there through a mindset, you yourself will live the miracle mentality, as Tim Story talked about today on our IG. And his new book, Miracle Mentality, is a perfect testament to finding the light and liberating others with that light, coming to a realization and actualization of the miracle of your mindset. And you yourself are a miracle, and you yourself are your mind. All right, my two favorite letters in my coaching program, Gigi.
Hi, David. And yeah, for the person who asked about IG, I think it's already posted on David's Instagram if you want to check it out. So, David, my question is, since I've been around you for, I don't know, a couple of months now, is how do you manage to actually empower people? Because one thing that I noticed is you don't have an audience. You actually raise our vibration. So what is the strategy, or what are you thinking of elevating all of the people who are always listening to you and not making them feel less than you and making them believe they achieve anything? Because this is what you have done to me, and I wonder how can I do that when I go and speak and things like that.
From the day I started my mission to empower others to be happy, it was going to be simple. It was going to be to find 1,000 people like you, Gigi, that I could teach to empower another 1,000, to empower another 1,000 with what they had, this happiness, this great mission of creating a collective consciousness of happiness, of abundance, where 1/8 of the world minimum would have an understanding that there's more than enough of everything for everyone, and to live in moments and minutes in fear, but outside of that, in a joy, a happiness that most people have never experienced. And through that, you now are at that stage where when we months ago, I taught you how to clear the interference and shift the paradigm of who you are and what you were, and to not only motivate you to get up and get back up and get started and get back started, but inspire you to get there. And now it sounds as if you're at that wonderful stage of scaling for me, where we can teach you to do the same thing that I do, which is to speak to people one person at a time, to directly connect to a message. I don't speak so people listen to me. I speak for what people listen for. And I have to do a lot of research and take a lot of time and take a lot of effort for my great mission, with pure faith that I'm going to continue to angle to something better in my life, a greater abundance, not only for me, but for others, and to teach others in the same respect. And I think when you narrow your focus to I'm speaking to what people are listening for, not listening to, and I specifically only have to find one person in whatever segmentation of time it is to teach one person, sooner or later that becomes two people times two people times three times three. And eventually in my lifetime, I will get to 1,000 GGs, empowering 1,000 GGs to empower 1,000 GGs, 1,000 times 1,000 is a million times 1,000 is a billion. So specifically, stay focused, continue to believe that you're only moving to a better place, a better position, or making others' positions better as well. It's always a joy to see some of my coaching clients join me on Fridays for a little bit more clarity and ask these tremendous questions. I call them softballs. So I do not, it's a catch 22 for me, because I think that Clubhouse should be a community. It shouldn't be a plug house. So I try not to plug too much in there, but you are a joy, Gigi. Thank you so much. I appreciate the question.
Thank you.
You're amazing. Okay. I'm going to take another question online. As I do, I'm going to bring up on deck here on Team Meltzer, Christina Madrigal. You are next up on the fabulous Price is Right. All right, here we go. Can you talk to the darkness being our imagining and the lightness being there for us to look upon? Imaging, I'm not sure I understand. Darkness is the interference, and light is what we are. We are light. We are connected to the greatest light, the greatest source, the greatest power of all times. And where we see darkness is the interference, the voids, the shortages, the ego-based consciousness that creates, you know, such a waste in our life. Just think, I love to use this example. Anyone, just pick the need to be offended. Think about, let's take a better one, my Sharon Lecter one, you know, the need to worry. You know, Sharon teaches worrying is just wishing for what you don't want. Imagine if you could take all the time, emotion, energy, and money in relationships that you worry, that you ruin by worrying, and put that into something positive. That's the intuitive conflict between darkness and light, that we ourselves are creating the darkness from what we already are, our health, our wealth, and our happiness. So identifying darkness is identifying ego-based consciousness, interference, voids, and shortages. And if we shift the paradigm, instead of trying to be healthy, be wealthy, and to be happy, instead, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am happy. What is it that's interfering? What's this darkness interfering with what I already am? That's where the light comes in, and it comes within and through us to not only share with others, but to clear the darkness. Remember, one particle of light will overcome a million particles of darkness. Go ahead, walk into a dark room and light a match. Watch how many particles of darkness disappear, dissipate, or dissolve. It's amazing. Okay, next up, one of my faves, Christina, what do you got for me?
Hi, happy Friday, everybody. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Feel excited on The Price is Right. So my question today is, one of the lessons I've been learning and realizing that's been coming up in my life is that I'm incredibly critical of myself, and it's reflecting in being critical of others as well. And it's kind of it's just showing up a lot lately, just this high expectation that I have that's becoming critical. And it's not super great for the flow of what I'm trying to get done. So can you speak a little bit to what might be happening, or any kind of ideas of getting that critical thoughts and thinkings outside of my head? Thank you so much.
What a great topic, because almost everyone in some degree is critical of themselves. And I think into the exact degree are critical of others. And in fact, you know, I have one of my favorite employees is so critical, and that criticalness is put within the context of himself, put onto documents. His criticalness is put onto others. And so I think it helps us when we detach self from a behavior like being critical and realize that the behavior itself, if it's applicable to self, it will be applicable to documents. It'll be applicable to others. It'll be applicable to images, to movies, whatever it is. That is a behavior. It's a form of vibration or frequency of awareness. And that being critical, right? It could be a weakness, but it also could be a strength. And so for me, because I am someone who has a capability or a behavior called being critical. And what I try to do is to identify what that behavior is so that I can determine where that behavior is a weakness. For example, I believe being critical of myself is a huge weakness, one that I've worked on. I believe being critical of others in most circumstances is an incredible weakness, except for when I'm vetting a deal, right? I love to trust people, but then use my critical behavior, the talent or skill of being critical, in which to vet the crap out of people so that I take accountability for making sure that what I hear is what's being executed in a business opportunity or deal. And so you can see how being critical is not good or bad. It's where am I being critical and how do I best utilize that skill or behavior in which to effectuate it as a strength, not as a weakness. And I think instead of trying to counteract being critical, what we want to do is, as we started with those weaknesses and strength, is put critical behavior in its perfect place where it's a strength and remove it from where it's a weakness. Does that help?
Yes, thank you so much. I love that, to focus on the strength and not being good or bad. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're amazing. Her voice just carries such great energy. Oh, my heart is warm when you speak. Thank you very much for joining. There's some people that come on here and you just feel their unbelievable frequency. And it's hard to believe that there's any critical thought in that pure vibration. So thank you. Okay, next up, Bianca Peinado. Bianca, you come up next. I'm going to take a question real quickly online. When you say non-negotiables, what does that mean? So I usually utilize the term non-negotiables with my own values. So I have several non-negotiables in my life. The first is a minimum of an hour a day on my health. It's non-negotiable. So no matter what is thrown at me, as I always like to say, when we come up with a well-developed plan or routine, God loves to laugh. And so he'll make sure that that's disrupted in some way. But if we have a adaptable routine, one full of non-negotiables, where no matter what has happened or occurred, that I am going to make sure before I have my unwinding routine, which to me is a non-negotiable, that I am going to spend a minimum of an hour a day on my health, a minimum amount of time with my family, either in person, on the phone, via email, or some sort of communication to stay connected to every single day consistently and persistently. But I will reiterate, because I have posted some of this stuff up there and people are not hearing what I'm saying. And they're like, oh, that's disgusting. You only spend, you know, minimum of 5 minutes with your teenage girls every day. I'm like, yes, you're right. It's disgusting. No, it's not, because I'm one of the few parents that probably have three teenage daughters, and I get to spend that time minimum, sometimes it's 5 hours, but every single day I am present and connected to the most important people in my life, regardless of whether it be in college or high school. I make an effort to make sure that we are consistently and persistently together and connected, so I know exactly what's going on. And whether it's a minimum of 5 minutes or 5 hours or 15 hours, I think that's the best exponential use of my time with my teenage daughters or my 10-year-old son, now 11, or my wife. So non-negotiables are things that no matter what you are going to do every day, in a context of time, a minimum amount of time. Okay, Bianca, you're up next.
Hi, this is Bianca. Thank you so much, David, for opening this space. So I also appreciate your words on the fear of failure, overcoming that, and also staying true to your values. So my question is a little bit more targeted towards a strategy for business, hoping that you could answer this or be willing to. But I notice on your social media platforms that you've really, I would say, almost mastered. I would say mastered, but I don't know how you feel about self-promotion. But anyways, you do with Instagram a lot of different templates. You also like do video editing, I can see. I'm wondering if you have a social media team to help you. I know that you also do LinkedIn very well as well. But if you have any advice on social media strategy, I founded a nonprofit. It's not just something I'm trying to promote, you know, my own self businesses per money making and all that, but it's super helpful and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important because if you're not building some sort of brand today, I think you are missing a huge opportunity, whether it's for your person, your charity, your solution service, product, whatever it may be. Because I don't think we can fathom the size, scope, and scale of the opportunity that exists with billions of people available at no cost of entry. Never before in history has this ever been available, and I think eventually it won't be available again. And so if we can utilize this time when it's free to access billions of people to align and to empower and inspire them and build a community around whatever particulars that we have. So in that concept, what I've decided to do is, number one, work on the ideas, because nothing beats good ideas. And I think one of the distinctive factors of what anything is a great product, a great service, a great solution, a great charity will always rise to the top. But some of them, because they don't know how to capture that greatness, they don't know how to modify that greatness, they don't know how to amplify that greatness. And the biggest one that's missing, because most people that can utilize, especially social media, have no clue on how to manage the perpetuation of that great idea or greatness. And so for me, my goal is to focus in on the frequency, the strength of my signal. So I spend an inordinate amount of time every day, about an hour and a half minimum, studying, being more interested than interesting, so I can continue to strengthen my signal. I also look at the spectrum of who it's resonating, the awareness and frequency and vibration in which I communicate. Is it a certain demographic or a certain following, so that I maximize my opportunity of sharing my content with open minds, which are the most valuable of all. They are worth 1,000 times more than a closed mind. And then finally, the clarity of my message, which takes an extraordinary amount of time to practice, so that I know what people are listening for. I don't want them to listen to me. I also know it's not what I say, it's what they hear. So I don't want to make sure that I have practiced what I say and clarified it so that everyone is hearing what I want to say and is listening for what I want to say. And so that's the main and primary goal of mine, is to effectuate that greatness of communication, vibration, and frequency. And then I hire people to capture it for me, to modify it for me, for all the different platforms, to amplify it for me. And we all work together, collaborate together to figure out a perpetual strategy, so that 10, 20, 30 years from now, as the community, which is exponentially growing, accesses as multi-generational, the very first video I did, the very first TED Talk I did, the very first book that I wrote, the very first stage I stepped on, the very first podcast that I did, the very first TV show or movie that I did, whatever it may be, that perpetual content still resonates a frequency of an audience in a spectrum, strengthening my signal, building a community to empower others to be happy. And so my personal suggestion would be focusing on being great. And you can always hire people to capture, modify, amplify, and perpetuate that greatness. And so if you haven't reached that level of, then just practice. And, you know, through that practice, utilize that in relative, I think I would say in relative distribution to the vibration or frequency or greatness you're able to create, you'll be able to invest an equal amount of time by either hiring or doing the capture, modification, amplification, and perpetuation. And they will rise together, and all those tides will help the other tides rise as well. I think that's a fantastic concept for everyone to share and to think about. Maybe go back and watch the replay of this. All of these, the replays, I have, speaking of which, you know, over 700 episodes of Millionaires, Billionaires, Entrepreneurs, Celebrities, Athletes, Entertainers. But the top downloaded podcast of the playbook is these trainings. So go back, watch the replay on the playbook. Every single platform featured, Spotify, Apple, Entrepreneur, Google, just check it out. You'll be able to watch this replay. If it was me, that last answer, it needs to be replayed a few times, but it is a multi-million dollar answer. Meaning if you follow what I'm talking about, the greatness, capture, modify, amplify, and perpetuate, and really understand the spectrum and messaging that I'm talking about and how to strengthen the signal, there's greatness coming to you and through you, I promise. Thank you so much, Bianca, for such a great question.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to take another picture online. We're rocking and rolling on Friday. Here we go. Chris Arnaldo, you're up after I read this quick question online. Here's one for you, a little bit off color, but than these normals, more pragmatic. What was your favorite part of being a sports agent and your least favorite part? My favorite part was getting a client. My least favorite part was keeping them. And those were the two capabilities that I had that made me a great sports agent. Still, I think they're great capabilities to have. Can you get a client and can you keep them? And it's much easier to get one than it is to keep them. And especially in the sports agentry world, where everybody is trying to steal what you have. They may not have the capability of getting them, but once you have gotten them, they know where that target is and they go after stealing them. So those are my two favorite things. I love the access. I love the people. I love the excitement, but keeping my clients, oh, it was difficult. Very good. Anyway, next up, Chris, are you ready?
Hey, happy Friday, David. Always inspired by you. Thank you for hosting these as always. I appreciate you and the team hosting these. Hey, so I working in the financial service industry, I run into a lot of people that just have issues with organizing money. I want to get your opinion as to, you know, why do people have such a, I would say, bad relationship with money? And then where do you think the opportunity is to help people with their relationship with money?
Oh, wow. So I had a terrible relationship with money. And the reason is most of the time is that people don't feel worthy and they don't know how to receive. The third other one is they don't understand timing and risk tolerance, and they use an emotional aspect and execute on logical reasons with their money. And so, you know, for me, that relationship with money has to understand the three worlds that they may be living in. And if we can identify what world of scarcity someone's living in, we can help them with their worthiness, with their timing and risk tolerance, with their detachment of emotion from money, the energy in which we put into the flow to get what we want. And I think that a lot of people, no matter how much money they have, they live in a world of not enough. They feel as if there's not enough. They are victims. They are in a world of why me, not try me. And eventually that relationship will always be one of scarcity, and not determined by how much they have, but by their mindset of where that relationship lies in a world of not enough. So I have friends who have $40 million homes that live in a world of not enough. There's always more. They're always a victim. They live in blame, shame, and justification, no accountability, and they are miserable rich people that live in the world of not enough. And the same with middle class and poor people. They does not matter. That world is a mindset. A relationship with money has created them a reality of not enough. And then the second world of just enough is they're in a hyper-competitive world that they live paycheck to paycheck and there's just enough to live on. determined upon how they have attached their emotions to the outcome that they want financially. And they haven't determined how the timing and risk tolerance in these emotions effectuate what they have and what they want. They haven't predetermined paying themselves, saving for themselves, giving to others, and the expenses. It's just a matter of detaching your emotion and determining a percentage of distribution, not how much you have. You want to make as much money as fast as you can. That's a very simple objective. It's one that has an outcome that's non-determinative and limiting. It's not a scarce outcome, but most people live in this world of just enough. They live like a tube, paycheck to paycheck, living and thinking that they just have enough to get by or just for them. They buy things they don't need to impress people they don't like because they have a relationship with money that is not a healthy relationship of abundance. The abundant relationship that we want to teach people through the aspect of detachment of emotion, through the aspect of identifying your timing and risk tolerance, through the aspect of a distribution that's devoid of that emotion, which is determined upon what you're going to pay yourself, what you're going to save yourself, what you're going to give to others, and what other expenses you need in order to have an existence determined upon your own values. These are very simple ways to transcend. Instead of things happening to you, things happening for you, they now happen through you. There, in the world of just enough, for example, we give to receive, right? Money activates you. It's not a trade or a negotiation. Money is what activates you in order to display who you are. Money is an activation. It's nothing to do with worth. And so we could activate a world of more than enough of everything to everything, everything of everyone. In other words, that if we live in the world of more than enough, where there's enough of everything for everyone, and we believe that everything comes through us with appreciation, that means to add value. What values do we add? Our values. We add our gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration to everything we receive, including the currency of money, the object of energy that comes through us to put us into the flow, to give to everyone else, to connect to us, to devoid us of the separation, the interferences, the voids, and the obstacles. This is a crucial relationship in our life because money is one of the two major currencies of your existence. Money is the object of energy to get what you want. If you utilize it to get what you want and you want the right things, you're going to be happy, which is the ultimate goal. And if you use it, that currency, to get what you don't want, what other people want for you, what's missing in your life, what isn't going to make you happy, buying things you don't need to impress people you don't like, you're not going to be happy. But in order to transcend from the world of two and four to the world of through, to transcend from not enough to just enough to more than enough, you have to have another currency blended or tempered with the currency of money, and that currency is called faith. You need to have the currency of faith, the object of energy to put you in the flow to get you where you want. You are exactly where you're supposed to be in the world of abundance. You have everything that you need in the world of abundance. And you will do everything possible to angle to more to come through you in an abundant world because there's more than enough. You are angling to what you want next with faith that you're going to end up somewhere better for not only you, but for everyone with everything. And if we can transcend from the world of not enough to just enough and transcend from there to a world of more than enough, we will collectively have a consciousness of happiness, which is my ultimate mission. Does that sound fair?
I love it. I love it. Thanks, David. Appreciate you. And thank you, Jake, for moderating. You're awesome.
All right. Yes. Thank you, Jake. I know I've made you're such a great little moderator there, my brother, but made your job easy today. All right. We have 5 minutes left. I'm going to take one question online, and then I'm going to take Bobby Makepeace. You will be our last question on Clubhouse. I just want to reset. Free coaching on Friday, every Friday, IG Live, Clubhouse, online. You can watch the replays on the playbook. Just download it. It's free. It's on Spotify, Entrepreneur, Google, Apple. Doesn't matter. It's featured everywhere. Just look up The Playbook and you will find all of these trainings, over 700 podcasts there. And my books, guides, and exercises are all free. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Okay, quick question here. With the access of the library we are blessed to have today from the internet, would you say college is necessary to be successful? I kind of touched on that one. How can you become better at allowing yourself to receive from others? I love this one because I think that we all have a problem receiving in one respect or another. You know how we become better at receiving? As we allow ourselves to receive, we practice it. We practice asking for what we want. Do you know anyone that can help me? And we find the sponsors and the power sponsors in our lives. We look upon everyone as a sponsor and a power sponsor with an abundant eye for an open mind. Remember, an open mind is 1,000 times more valuable than a closed mind, even if they're exactly your low-hanging fruit. You know, I've worked in sales for so many years. I coach so many sales forces, executives in sales, and they're so stuck on finding the exact candidate, the prospect that fits exactly into their criteria, the lowest hanging fruit. I said, there's a problem. There's a problem with that lowest hanging fruit. They have a closed mind. It's the wrong time, emotion, or value right now. They have a closed mind. And that open mind over there, the one that you can just ask, you know, anyone that could help me, is 1,000 times more valuable, and it doesn't cost anything. It's so easy. You just got to ask. And so you need to allow yourself to receive by practicing receiving. And the way that we practice receiving is to ask for what we want and see exactly how we feel and how the other people feel and how the people who witness it feel. And pretty soon we'll realize that receiving is equal to or greater than an importance to giving. Because you can't give what you don't receive. All right, last question. No better person than a man named Makepeace. Bobby, make peace and be happy. You're up, my friend.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate you letting me come on and have a word with you.
Absolutely.
So I've come to a bit of a sticking point in my financial life and my sort of life. I currently live at home. I moved away from London because of few mental problems I had. I had to move home and sort shit out here. And for a while, I started to create local contacts here as a summer photographer. I started getting nightclub photography jobs, portrait jobs, etc. And since the pandemic, things actually went good for me because restaurants needed work and stuff. But I've come to a point now where I've worked side hustles. Like my side hustle was actually a real job. I was a postman for a bit whilst doing portraits at the weekend. And there's all this like work that is really mundane and soul destroying for me. But right now I'm so happy because I'm not working anything like that. I'm literally solely working on photography and like doing like a gratitude project and approaching people in the street and creating content on TikTok. I joined Clubhouse 2 days ago. I'm so excited by this whole platform and being able to speak to people like yourself. But financially, there's no money coming in. And it scares me because I think, well, because of where I live, everyone's settling down, buying houses, getting the newest thing. And I know what you're getting at with the whole buying things to make people think that you're better than you are. But It's hard because I do want my own place. I don't want to live at home. I'm 30. I've lived on my own before and I'm back. So, but there's no money coming in, but I feel absolutely fulfilled creativity. I can't speak. I feel really fulfilled and happy as a creative right now and an artist.
Yeah. No, a lot of artists and creatives feel that way and they're lying to themselves. They're not challenging themselves. Look, you want to move out. You should move out. And, you know, I was thinking when you were a postman, you were going to tell me that you would take your camera or your phone around with you. And while you're being a postman, creating art,
I did.
Your portraits.
I got told off, though.
Okay. But then find another activity you get paid for that can complement or be synergistic or supplementary to the skill sets that you have, either by overlapping them with what you do, utilizing time to your advantage, also using your mental, your mindset to find the love, the lessons, and the things that you do to have that activity you get paid for. And so if you really want something like to move out and have your own autonomy in your own space, if that's important to you, according to your values, then stop lying to yourself and figure out a way to learn to love an activity that will pay for your own place, because you obviously have the capability to do so. You have the skills, the knowledge, and desire. And I think the creativity you have and the desire you have and the passion you have has a lot of alignment, have a lot of possibilities and capabilities that are synergistic, supplementary to things that are doing well, that pay very well, activity that is stable right now that pay very well, or even lottery tickets of things you could make a lot of money with. If somebody has that skill set, there's so many digital things that are going on that need people like you with creative ability. You need to be more interested than interesting. Find those opportunities, ask for help. Like I said, anybody ask these types of problems and you feel like you're stuck, please email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I will help find you the right people that can help you understand that alignment, that synergistic and supplementary value that you have currently with the skill sets that you have, and even the love that you've already ascertained by learning to love photography and art the way that you have. We lie to ourselves. We create these void shortages and obstacles in our mind. There are many and multiple solutions to this issue of moving out. And one is just determining how your skill sets are aligned with activity you get paid for or supplementary to, meaning overlapping. And you can find those opportunities. There's many out there. And I'm happy to help you, as I said, and I'm happy to help everyone. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Remember, next week's coaching is training is coach versus mentor and all the aspects that we talked earlier in the day with. We have last episode of season one of 2 Minute Drill airs tonight on Bloomberg and Amazon. And season two, we just finished last night. All 12 episodes are in the can. They will be modified, amplified, and perpetuated in June on Bloomberg and Amazon as well. Reminder, email me if you want any of the guides from today, exercises, or my book. I'll sign it, send it to you, and pay for shipping. david@dmeltzer.com. Remember, most importantly, everyone, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to empower others to be happy.